This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This past Saturday, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill inducted a new chancellor. Carol Folt has signed on to lead the school. It was a history-making event. Carol Folt is the first woman ever to serve as chancellor at UNC Chapel Hill. More than 2,500 people showed up to watch the induction. She comes to UNC after 30 years at Dartmouth College, and she is on our program today. Carol Folt, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So Saturday was the induction, but you've been at UNC since July. What have you been learning? What have you been seeing and learning about and doing since then?
Well, I've been doing many different things, as you can imagine. Learning the beautiful campus. It's a walkable, gorgeous place, and I've spent a lot of time walking around there. Of course, meeting with faculty, lots of events with students after classes start. And I've had a great chance to get around the state quite a bit and meet people over in Raleigh and learn about the state as well as the institution.
You, in your speech, I know you spoke about making the university more accessible to the public. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think this is a university that is part of the public. It's an indispensable part of the state. I think I was talking about the ideas that we want to listen to people, find out from people around the state what aspects of Carolina are most important to them, how we can be even better partners than we are, and how we can work together with the state to achieve North Carolina's dreams as well as the real aspirations of the students and the faculty and the staff here.
And I know you have not been here a long, long time, but just in that short time that you've been here and listening, what are you learning? What's your sense just initially of what it is people want and how things might change at the university to make it more accessible?
Well, I think public education in America has been the most important part of our innovation as a country. People express so frequently here the value that they've placed on the possibility of attending this great institution. There's a great pride in what Carolina has meant to the state of North Carolina, and I think people really want to see that well understood, spoken of. There's also a sense that with all the inventions and creativity and the discoveries that are happening here every single day, that we can do even more together to take what's happening here and turn it into tangible products for jobs and industry, but also that it fuels the arts and it fuels the greatest aspects of human thought. So there's lots of aspiration. Let's see this really happen.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, Governor Pat McCrory, for instance, introduced you, and he has stressed the need to give students skills that align with the needs of the marketplace. And really, when asked to expand on that, made it clear that some of the values of a liberal arts education need to be reconsidered so that it's more market-oriented, more industrial-oriented, corporately-oriented. Do you risk the values of a liberal arts education if we try to tune in to what corporations are asking for now?
Actually, I think that what corporations are asking for is to have people that don't just do the jobs of today, but we need the people that will create the jobs of tomorrow. We need the people that can be as flexible as possible. I was reading once recently that people that graduate today, within 5 years, 60 to 80% of them will need to be able to work in jobs that do not yet exist. So when I think about that, I think we have to be developing flexible learners, people that can retrieve information, take that information, get all the way to the edge of a field, and use what they learn from across the spectrum of thought to develop the new fields, the fields of tomorrow. And I think that's been a mistaken understanding, is that the liberal arts is, in fact, a static way of learning. It's quite an active learning. It's an engagement that is across silos, not in silos. You know, I was talking to people recently and said one of, if not the greatest sector of growth in the world in education is the addition of liberal arts, cross-disciplinary thinking into curricula, because people feel that what's made America so great has been the fact that we graduate students that have a spectrum of understanding and can apply it. But in addition, it is changing. And I talked briefly about it, love to talk more, that it's moving from breadth and depth to breadth, depth, and practice so that our students actually graduate not just knowing about things, having studied them, but learn how to know, study, and then apply, make it all work. And then it is absolutely beautiful, the best possible education.
So what has to happen at UNC Chapel Hill to make that vision a reality?
I think Chapel Hill is actually one of the leaders in the nation on this. It has this very low silo anyway. They've been very interactive. If you look at an institution like this that has such an active research environment, you realize that by nature they have to be interdisciplinary. People have known for quite a while that you cannot solve complicated problems from any one discipline. So the faculty already work across schools. It's close to 65 or 70% of the undergraduates in arts and sciences are already deeply engaged in one-on-one or group project-based learning with faculty. I think that is the future for the greatest educations. Put your students in teams with your outstanding thinkers, the people that are creating new knowledge, and not only are they going to learn what we know today, they're going to learn how to create what we need in the future. So it's very direct, very immediate, and it has a very specific set of outcomes that go directly back into the local community. So it's really happening here. We just need to fuel it even more.
Well, you're suggesting, as you just said, that it's really happening there, but the clear suggestion in Governor McCrory's comments was there's something wrong with the university. He's talking about liberal arts as not being effective enough, that we have to have more people in jobs. Gender studies in particular he took issue with and targeted as part of what he considers, and many others do in his camp, a problem with the university. It's not that the university is on the right track, according to McCrory. Something has to change. It's not good enough.
Well, I always look at these things in a very different way. We are educators. That's what we do. And frequently when people are expressing a concern about what's happening on our campuses, it's important to listen. What is it that they're really saying? Or what is it that they don't know about what goes on here that we can help them understand? And how can we learn from what they do? So I think, for example, something like gender studies is great for us to really think about that. We have a world that 50 years ago did not have nearly as many women working. We've certainly completely changed as society in America, where women are a vital and active part of the workforce. And looking forward, our women have to be equally educated partners if our nation is going to advance. As we diversify our workplace, as we change our communities, we need to investigate what are the things that we can do better, how can we incorporate women, people from different backgrounds, different political, social systems, and we learn from that. So this is a great opportunity for us not to get entrenched into opposite positions, but to think about ways that we can reach out and explain why we do what we do and what our students are actually getting from that that is going to make them extremely effective community leaders as they go forward.
Your speech also stresses that UNC offers a full needs-based financial aid. Why is that particularly important to you?
Well, I think when I think of the things that this institution does, you know, outstanding intellectual development and personal development, it is a truly meaningful higher purpose to make that be available to students from any background in life. The fact that Carolina, as the first public, committed to the education of the people of the state for the greater good, can continue to provide financial aid to help students be able to attend here is of deep, deep interest to the state. I come from a family. My mother was born in America, but the rest of her family was born in Albania, very much raised in that immigrant world where we thought that you came to America to be able to achieve a greater life, a free life. Education was extremely important, and I was able to go to school because I could afford to work as a waitress and put myself through school. I think about that every day and want our students to be able to come here and achieve what I was able to do.
That means, though, that there would, I mean, there have been cuts certainly consistently now over the past few years to higher education and, relatively speaking, cuts to K-12 education in this state as well. Does that mean that you would have to be part of an effort to see greater funding for higher education so that the tuition doesn't go up and people of modest and low wealth can still afford to go there?
Well, I think it is really important. From my own perspective, investment in education is as vital to this state as any other investment. It is what will have this state develop a knowledge-based economy, which is the economy that is booming across the nation and the world. It's what can bring you out of poverty into being part of the new industries and technologies. Outstanding education is also one of the most attractive aspects of a state that will draw new businesses here, that and a very good, strong, and outstanding healthcare system. So I think these are win-wins, that we can do it here. It has a very proud tradition and quite a strong support from the state for 220 years. So people here do believe in it. It's absolutely critical, though, that we do continue it. The K through 12 piece is also vital. Now, Carolina has a wonderful education school. There are a significant number of teachers produced here. The institution itself creates products that it puts out online for free to educate teachers. We're doing everything we can to be deeply embedded in communities. Just tomorrow, I'm going out to one of the schools we serve with the advising program. It is a program where Carolina has produced students that go back into local communities, help high school kids get great advice, learn how to take their dreams.
Chancellor Fold, I'm going to have to take a break right here. Sorry to interrupt, and then we're going to come back and continue our conversation with the new chancellor of UNC Chapel Hill, Carol Folt, on the State of Things. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Carol Folt is with us, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill's new chancellor, and it's a tough job running a large university like this, and you certainly inherit some of the challenges that go with the job. You're taking over for Holden Thorpe. He resigned in the midst of an academic fraud scandal in the African-American Studies Department. What are you doing about that to look into it? What do you think is at stake in that problem?
Well, this institution had many studies. I think we had 7 different external groups investigate it. And I think I've walked in at a time when the deep dive has been taken. They've taken a lot of very significant actions, including a number of changes to processes that have been approved by the accrediting board. My goal is to make sure it never happens again. You know, we're putting in other processes to really investigate things. Jim Dean, the provost, is together with Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director, doing an intensive look at students in our athletes from their recruitment all the way through graduation to assure that we can give our student athletes the same chance to succeed as every one of our students. So lots of action in place, but I feel also very impressed with what people did try to do to address this before I came.
What needs to be done going forward?
Well, we have this panel that's going, that's looking at all the different processes, making sure that we have good metrics. Can we evaluate how students are going through? Have we put in all the safety valves you'd like to make sure that as a student comes in, they're being followed? Many things were changed in the way they looked at course assignments and follow courses. That's all part of an extensive report that was reviewed more than a year ago by the accrediting board. So there are many things in place that I think are important, Frank.
These courses tend to be under assault, American Studies, and as I said, we go back to the earlier question about Governor McCrory taking aim at gender studies. You mentioned in the context of gender studies, it's important for women to have an education. But gender studies, African-American studies, these are critical thinking about the history of a people. It's not just preparing us for jobs in the future in particular, but a critical look at a history that involves a particular group of people. Gender studies, for one, allows women to see the way women are treated within a society. It's not just training for MBAs. So what's the value of these programs? Why do you think, if you do, that these programs need to be supported and their credibility defended?
I think you said it beautifully. Thank you for that great statement. I agree. I think as we educate people, it's vitally important to think about the context for the great events of history. We learn so much about what we're going to do in the future by understanding what we did in the past. In the same way, we rethink social context with each change. We look at war, we look at economic changes, and we use that information to help us understand the future. It is absolutely essential that we understand gender relations, that we understand our African American history, that we understand our history in all cultures. This is a very dynamic world. The diversity in North Carolina, in America, is changing rapidly, and our students need to graduate as citizens of the world that have at their fingertips that understanding of how we got to be who we are, what those challenges are in our diversity, and how we work across difference to really achieve the greatness that we aspire to achieve. So I think they're vital. I do think they also bring in literature, they bring in music, they bring in an understanding of humanity that also enriches our enlightenment. And at my installation, I talked a lot about our deep mission in Lux and Libertas, enlightenment leading to liberty. So I see all these things being really important.
One of the other controversies that you have inherited is sexual assault on campus. Right now, 3 U.S. Department of Education investigations into UNC for how the school handles sexual assault cases, for underreporting or alleged underreporting sexual assault cases, and for retaliation against a student in when one particular case who reported a sexual assault case. Has this affected how UNC will address sexual assault allegations in the future?
It has had influence already. There have been a number of actions that were taken by Chancellor Thorpe. We've had, of course, changes in the federal landscape. There has been such a new look at what even Title IX means with respect to creating an educational environment in which all students can thrive. And in some ways, that does occur, has issues associated with sexual assault. We have a wonderful task force deep at work here. It began before I came. It's been working solidly for a number of months. I've met with them. They will be making a series of recommendations for further actions that we can take. We're also hiring, we're just about to hire a person to help lead in more of our Title IX work. So I think we'll be taking a lot of action, but what's been even more important, I think, is the extent to which students, faculty, community members, staff all see this as a real opportunity for us to reaffirm our commitment to building an educational community in which all members of the community can thrive. You know, that's our higher purpose, and this at Chapel Hill, as it is true at other universities in America, is an important issue, and we're going to continue to try to do it right, and we just won't stop trying.
The Secretary of State is also probing another UNC sports scandal, this one involving sports agents giving money and gifts to student athletes. Former UNC player Greg Little has admitted receiving $20,000. How is all of this at UNC, how is UNC going to change how it handles student athletes?
Well, as I said, many things are already underway. They have really revamped a lot of their advising. I mean, one of the most important things is to help our students understand what their responsibility is as a student, and it is up to us to also work with them to make sure we're helping people understand what their obligations are. The NCAA is a very complicated organization with many, many rules, and we have to keep current. You can't believe how hard those coaches work just to keep up with all that regulation. But it serves a purpose of keeping things independent, strong, and ensuring integrity. I think that as this progresses through the state, through the legislature, we have the law enforcement being able to do what it does. It can ask questions. It has the power of subpoena, things that a university doesn't have. And we will support every single one of their actions and be grateful for the extent to which they are able to investigate it and help ensure we have a better environment.
Let's take a step back and take a look at the big picture. And this is not just the University of North Carolina, but all of our universities. The amount of money that is involved in college sports, the these days. And you talked about the history and tradition of UNC. Certainly, that's wrapped up in its athletic programs. And yet, there is so much money now. There are those who say that, corruption is inevitable. And unless you take the money out, there's probably no way to have a clean system. How do you feel about that, money and college athletics?
One thing I really appreciated by the Rawlings panel was that they did take a step back. They weren't really trying to align themselves specifically with North Carolina's practices and policies. They didn't investigate those. But they said, we have a great institution who has asked us in to reflect. And they were generous to come, and they talked about issues that have to do with money, with integrity, with doing whatever you could do to keep the aspects of student health separate from the athletic department advising. They had many, many recommendations. And a number of them can be addressed by individual campuses. At North Carolina, I think we had already taken action in every one of those and in fact, are probably one of the leading nations in those areas. Other of their recommendations are going to be ones that need to be addressed at the conference level and at the national level. We have already begun talking about that at the ACC. We spent time at the last president's meeting talking quite a bit about that. Hunter Rawlings, president of the AAU, is having a panel on athletics and academics at the next AAU meeting, again, bringing these presidents together across the nation to say, what do we want to do better? How can we fix it? And Bubba Cunningham is bringing it forward with the athletic directors and has already developed a strong working group from some outstanding schools. So I think there is energy and enthusiasm, and we will see people talking about it at the different levels where the actions need to be taken as we think about how to move forward.
Chancellor Folt, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. It's really wonderful speaking with you.
Carol Folt, the Chancellor of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.